I'm on my way home. I'll be in my driveway, so it's okay. Yeah?
Let's do it. First of all, we are going to try to limit the amount of CarCast podcasts that we do.
No. We're going to do a poll.
This is what you want to do? You want to start this by doing a poll?
Yes.
Okay.
So, because we want to keep these as fresh as possible.
Yeah.
And we can't really record in the afternoon because I have to go in and work. So the easiest way to do it in terms of getting them out first thing in the morning with fresh information is with me doing it while I'm driving home at night. Now, Amal, the super nerd, and I say that as a term of respect, because in this case, his nerddom is important. He wants this podcast to sound good. And I will say that I have listened to podcasts with bad sound, and they're infuriating to listen to. So the audience has a choice. While things aren't perfect in terms of timing in the playoffs, we can continue to CarCast these so you get the news as early as possible and as fresh as possible, but not with great sound. Or you can get better sound, but maybe not as timely. So we want to know what you think.
That's our official poll. And with that, we'll kick off the podcast. Great intro, Elliot. Welcome to 31 Thoughts, the podcast presented by the GMC Sierra AT4. First of all, we'll begin this podcast by apologizing for the bags under Amal Delich's eyes tomorrow as he puts together this podcast in the wee hours. We'll try to make this, Amal, as mistake-free as possible, but given how Elliot and I behave, there are no guarantees.
Yeah, we appreciate you, Amal, and we appreciate our listeners, so that's why we want to leave a lot of this choice up to you.
Amen. Okay, not that long ago, although it seems like it was a million years ago, we were in Chicago at the NHL media launch, the NHL car wash, as it's called, and one of our interviews was with Nick Ehlers, and this was on the heels of all the rumors about Ehlers, and Ehlers isn't a playoff guy, and he's going to the Boston Bruins, and he talked about how he heard all these things and sort of used that as fuel, playing with a chip on his shoulder, all of that. After tonight, two goals, including the game winner on a really nice curl and drag shot.
Yeah.
All that stuff about Ehlers and playoffs that we'd heard in years previous, that's all gone now, right? That's all gone.
It changed last year, and I thought a lot about Paul Stastny. Our interview with Paul Stastny last week where he told us that Ehlers' nickname is Fly, and he talked about how much that changed Ehlers' outlook and how much more confident a person he was. And I thought that was the case all night tonight. In the post-game interview, he talked about how he blew a defensive assignment, but it didn't crater his game, right? He'd scored one earlier, and obviously he scored a big one later. It was a huge game for him. He's a completely different person. And you could just see that whole game change. Now, I have to let you in on something, Jeff,
okay. And
by extension, Amal and the audience. So Archibald took that penalty, right?
Yeah, that was a turning point for Winnipeg.
And I felt, you know, it had to be mentioned because it was a big turning point. And then, you know, I mentioned it after the game and we thought we had to do it again in the overnight hit. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it a third time. Like, maybe I'm soft. Maybe I'm weak. I couldn't use it a third time. I know what it's like to have a bad night. I think everybody knows what it's like to have a bad day. Unfortunately, you know the rules going in. As I always say, you make these mistakes on this scale and everybody sees them. And I accept that in my career. And I think all NHL players accept that too. I couldn't go there a third time. I was like, it's enough. I can't do it again.
Yeah, that whole third, though, and that whole comeback started with that, with the hit on Logan Stanley.
Well, I'll tell you something else, Jeff. I think it started, too. I think the Oilers took their foot off the gas in terms of the way they were forechecking and attacking. And it contributed to it.
Listen, Dave Tippett talked a lot about that in his post-game presser as well, without getting into any specifics. You could tell, like, when coaches start talking about learning lessons and learning how not to play, you know exactly what they're going for. And that's what Tippett talked about after the game on Sunday. And now it's a stranglehold. Now it's Winnipeg up 3-0. And the thoughts of the Edmonton Oilers winning four games in a row, whew. It's Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, so you never count them out. But, man, down 3-0 against the Winnipeg Jets team that just had an incredible comeback, an incredible third period comeback.
Yeah.
And I don't know. If I'm Winnipeg, I'm feeling great about myself. If I'm Edmonton, man, this is a tough one to recover from. I know they're all pro athletes and rearview mirror, yep, and that's how you got there and mentally training. But that's a tough one to park, man. That's a really tough one.
Well, the other thing, too, is if you're the Oilers, Mike Smith back-to-back.
Yeah.
You're probably going and asking him if he can do it.
Yes.
You know what he's going to say.
He's going to say he can do it.
He's going to say, of course. I would probably put him in. If you really believe that he's good enough to play, I'd probably put him in. If I'm going down, I'm going down with Mike Smith. But it's not an easy decision.
He's Dave Tippett's default setting.
Yeah.
Mike Smith is the default setting there. Okay, so a couple of things to get to here. And as we wait to see what happens with the Winnipeg Jets and the Edmonton Oilers, a couple of teams eliminated from Stanley Cup playoff contention here. Both of them recent Stanley Cup champions themselves as well. Want to get to St. Louis, but we'll start with the Washington Capitals. The only game they win in this series, Elliot, is the first one. They are bounced in five, and now the questions begin. First of all, I loved that they kept the camera on Chara during Handshake Alley. Not that I'm a huge handshake guy to begin with, but I thought that one was poignant. That one was real special. And one moment stood out more than any of them to me, and that was the hug that McAvoy gave Chara.
I thought you were going to say Bergeron.
That was a good one, too. But just what Chara did for McAvoy to help establish his career. Like, McAvoy didn't even try to go in for a handshake. He just, like, tried to lunge at Chara to give him a big bear hug. I just thought it was a wonderful moment.
We're all sitting here wondering, is this the end?
I don't know.
I have no idea. Just the look in his eyes, just like, and it was great camera work. Before they did the handshake line, they showed Chara and the look in his eyes.
Yeah, I don't know. I've always had that feeling about Chara, like, to just as long as he wants to play, as long as someone's going to pay to keep him in the league. And even then, he might just come back and play anyway. I don't know. Doesn't he kind of have that, you'll have to drag me off the ice?
Yes.
Kicking and screaming vibe. But that's how I've always felt about Chara.
I'm with you on that. It was hard not to think about it with the look in his eyes. You know, there was a little bit of Chara, the way he looks at you. And I know I'm totally overthinking this in the moment. I get it. The way he always looks at you, his eyes look like they're looking through you. They're intense. They're boring, right? Like a hole through whichever part of your body he's looking at. Yeah. Those look more, he looked more resigned, a little bit sadder than, you know, normally I would see him. And that really stuck out to me. It really grabbed me. So, I mean, I don't know, but you know, Washington, they're going to have some big decisions. You know, Kuznetsov, that awful play that took the goal away, the one that made it could have made it 3-2 late. To me, that's the biggest decision is, you know, where are they going with him? You know, someone texted me tonight and they said, you know, Washington's lost in the first round three times since they won the cup. Is this who they really are, and is the cup a fluke? And I don't buy that for a second. I think that's crazy. I think they've been a hell of a team for a long time. And I don't think their Stanley Cup is a fluke. But what I do think, and I don't think it's a coincidence, is, hey, Ovechkin deserved the Conn Smythe that year, but Kuznetsov was the X factor. And since that season, like, he was so good. If you had given Kuznetsov the Conn Smythe that year, I would have been totally okay with that. This, since then, he has been terrible. Well, maybe terrible is a bad word, but he hasn't been what you expect of him, and they've lost that. His drop and decline has taken Washington kind of with it.
I'm with you on that penalty on the Eller play, on the Eller goal. I still can't figure out, and I watched it in real time and have watched the replays and thought about it since. I can't think of what's going through his mind at that time when he does that. Like, what does he think the outcome is? Like, what do you think is going to happen at the end of that play? We all understand that it feels like the Washington Capitals are at the end of the rope with Kuznetsov right now. But what can you do? It's four more years. It's $7.8 million. In this time right now with flat cap and budgets tightened, even if they wanted to do something with Kuznetsov, could they?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's hard. You make a really good point. I'm just looking at it from their point of view. I totally realize you ask a fair question. For every seller, there's got to be a buyer, and his value is low right now, as low as it's ever been. I just think that's their biggest offseason question. Like, you know, I mean, obviously the biggest one is Ovechkin. Yeah. I can't see that not working out. I know Washington is one of those teams that's really working the expansion draft hard. They're concerned about some of the choices they might have to potentially make. I don't know. So I've kind of wondered if maybe with Ovechkin, it's one of those things where they wait until after the expansion draft and sign him. That's just me talking out of my butt. So I understand Ovechkin's the number one thing. I think that one sorts itself out. Mm-hmm. But after that, Kuznetsov now becomes your number one issue.
Where's the Samsonov situation and the in the hierarchy of issues here for Washington?
Well, it's there. There's no question about it. Losing Vanecek in the playoffs really hurt them. He really saved them early in the season when Samsonov was out. You know, last year they made a coaching change because they felt that Todd Reirden, one of the toughest things to do is to move from an assistant on a team to a head coach, right? Yes. On the same team.
Yes.
Because you go from the good cop to the bad cop.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work. It rarely works. So now they make the change for that reason because they felt that the players weren't buying into that and they hated the way they came back in the bubble. And then what happens? They come back and they're really banged up. I think that's one thing that's fair. I think they're really banged up, but they lose again, and some of it goes sideways because of bad choices. Boy, I think that's a big question for the franchise. You know you're talented. You know you're beaten up a bit, but I think you're looking and you're saying some of these wounds are self-inflicted. How do we get out of that cycle?
Mm-hmm. Want to ask one final thing about Ovechkin, then we'll move on. I'm going to get your thoughts on the Boston Bruins here. What does a next contract look like for Ovechkin? Is it term, or does he turn into the evergreen man and is on one-year big money deals each and every season?
I don't think it'll be a one-year big money deal. I don't see that. I've wondered about that. I don't think that's the case. You know, I've heard rumblings about four-year deals, which ties him into Backstrom. The number in millions is a two-digit number.
Yeah,
I don't know exactly what it's going to be, but I think it's going to be something like that. You know, there's an understanding here. You know, people are going to look at this and they're going to say, yeah, you shouldn't pay a guy at his age that number. This is a different case. How much more are the Washington Capitals worth because Alexander Ovechkin is there? This is a legacy contract as much as an anything else contract. And the other thing, too, is you're getting the Gretzky goal chase out of it, too, right?
Yeah.
So this is about as much as how much he's worth to the franchise as much as how much do you pay a guy who's, you know, when it's over, he's going to be 40. It's not about that.
100% agree. This is a contract that's not just about how many wins is Alex Ovechkin going to contribute to and chases for the Stanley Cup. It's the Gretzky race, and it's what has happened to the Washington Capitals. And I hate using terms like brand, but here I go. Look what's happened to that brand since Ovechkin got there and what that brand is now with Ovechkin. That's why no matter what the number is going to be for Alex Ovechkin, I'll look at it and I'll say That's a really good number, but it's still probably not enough what this guy has meant to that franchise.
Oh, 100%. I am totally... You can't pay this guy enough.
No.
He deserves every penny he's going to get.
The Boston Bruins move on. And we should point out, too, Taylor Hall moves on to the second round.
First time ever.
Looking like a real nice deal. What do you make of the Boston Bruins and their performance against the Caps? And you got to surrender it here for Tuukka Rask, big time.
Yes, fantastic. You know, with Hall, too, think about it. They were how close to going down 2-0 when Hall scored.
Yeah.
Turning point of the series. Rask, great. McAvoy, great. This year, of all my awards, the hardest one was the Norris.
Mm-hmm.
McAvoy was on my Norris ballot last year. He was not on it this year. But he's a great player, man.
Yeah.
He's a great player. Marchand was on my Hart ballot this year. You know, there's one thing about my Hart ballot. They're already in. I really regret already. But Marchand is on it. I think he had a phenomenal year. I just think they're really good. That's a team in the playoffs. Their identity, it just fits so well. And with Rask, I'm happy for Rask because of everything he went through last year and his commitment getting questioned for terrible reasons. I'm very happy for Rask.
Amen. Okay. St. Louis Blues eliminated, swept by the Colorado Avalanche. 5-2 is the final on Sunday. Let me ask you the same question that the anonymous person on your text asked you about the Caps.
Yeah.
Was St. Louis's cup a fluke?
Yeah, I got to tell you, I don't believe when you win the Stanley Cup, it's a fluke. I don't believe that. But again, you know, we talked about with Washington, Kuznetsov's still there, but he's lost his effectiveness for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
They lost Pietrangelo. And the one thing that interests me the most about the Blues is their general manager. He is fearless.
Yes.
And he will take this very emotionally, Doug Armstrong. Very emotionally.
What we've seen from Doug Armstrong, for those that may not have been paying attention to the St. Louis Blues the last few years, if he doesn't think his team is good, regardless of whether they're in a playoff chase or even in a playoff position, come trade deadline, he's not shy about moving out players. That's been Doug Armstrong.
I think it's even more than that. I think that the Pietrangelo thing, you know, last year, what did he say? He said, I can't let this player have more power than the owner, basically, right? So if the St. Louis Blues aren't going to give Alex Pietrangelo everything he wanted in terms of a full no-move club, they're willing to give him some things, but not everything, right?
Yeah.
That tells you that that organization is married to no player.
Mm-hmm.
So after a finish like this one, and you know that that's the kind of the philosophy of the organization, if I was a player on the St. Louis Blues, I wouldn't feel incredibly comfortable about what could happen.
And that's everybody.
Obviously, I think some players are closer to untouchable than others. But, you know, it's hard not to look at this and say, what could they do? To me, they're going to be one of the more interesting teams in the offseason because they won't think that this will be acceptable.
So then here become the questions.
Yeah.
For the St. Louis Blues here. One, we should point out as well, Jordan Binnington goes to $6 million next season as well.
He's
so
done.
There's a bump in pay there. There are questions around Jaden Schwartz, free agent, Tyler Bozak, Mike Hoffman, and there are a lot of questions about Mike Hoffman and where's his position on the power play for a large part of this season. There's questions out there immediately for the St. Louis Blues, regardless of what you want to do by way of trade and doing other things. But right away, there's three pieces of business there in Schwartz, Bozak, and Hoffman. Do you have a thought on that?
Boy, I got to think that Bozak is going elsewhere. Hoffman, it just didn't work. I don't see him staying there. You know, Schwartz, they wanted to keep Schwartz.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special report.
You there?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry about that. I just got home and into my driveway. Maybe that's what happened. Okay, I turned my Wi-Fi off. So where was the last place I was?
Jaden Schwartz.
Okay. No, I you know what? I talked like 5 minutes after that. Okay.
Oh my God.
That's so funny. So Jaden Schwartz, like, they obviously wanted to keep him. That's why they didn't trade him. You know, they have huge respect for him on and off the ice. I just see the Blues as a team that takes a timeout, because nothing's going to happen in the short term anyway, mm-hmm. but starts to say, we have to make some hard decisions here. Because that's also a no BS organization. Like, they speak pretty honestly internally there. I think they're going to talk about some very difficult decisions and say, okay, do we have to change the direction of our group?
Do we use the R word here?
Rebuild? No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
No, I don't believe that, because I still think they have a lot of good pieces.
Oh, for sure they do.
Like, I could see St. Louis saying to Buffalo, what do we have to do to be in the Eichel conversation here? Now, Buffalo might not want to deal with them again,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, I could see that. They have some good young players there. But I could see them doing not a rebuild, but what can we do to re-energize ourselves here?
I wonder how much of it you look at and you say, like, first of all, you're right. They have real good high-end hockey players on this team, whether it's, you know, Ryan O'Reilly, whether it's, you know, Braden Schenn. And that mixes in with players like Jordan Kyrou and Robert Thomas. All successful teams do this. When you have really good young players, you want to make sure you have good veterans around them, but not veterans that are sort of out of reach in a completely different phase of their life. Like, these are still players that are youngish enough that they can still have some type of influence on younger hockey players. That's why I'm with you. I don't think look at St. Louis and go, eh, you know what? Last year it was Vancouver. This year it's Colorado. Team's not good enough. Let's tear the whole thing down. To me, that's foolish. But I think you need to be looking at, what's this team going to look like in 3 to 5 years when Robert Thomas and Jordan Kyrou have more significant positions in the organization? I think that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's very fair. You know, someone sent me a text tonight. Do you think that, you know, Berube's in trouble?
I was going to ask you that.
And I was like, he won the Stanley Cup 2 years ago. The only way I think that for any reason would he not want to be there?
Listen, good on Craig Berube, because I can remember, you know, when he was, you know, interviewing for positions in the DEL in Germany. And then caught on with the St. Louis Blues and then ended up taking over and getting a head coaching position and winning the Stanley Cup. Like, why would you? He's kind of fresh back in the game. I don't know why he'd want to step away.
The only thing I would wonder about St. Louis and coaching, I mean, aside from if for whatever reason Berube didn't want to be there anymore, is they have Mike Van Rijn on the bench. And I think he's going to be on Arizona's short list. But again, what did we talk about before with Todd Reirden in Washington? Is it's very hard to go from an assistant to a head on the same team. I don't know. Like, I was surprised to get that text, because I would think this guy won 2 years ago. Why would it even be a question?
So they're bounced out by the Colorado Avalanche, and I want to get to Nazem Kadri here in a couple of moments.
Yep.
But first, a thought on the Avs. Not that we can glean much from the looking at a St. Louis Blues series that kind of went the way we all thought it would go. I mean, most of us thought it would go this way. Nathan MacKinnon, outstanding. Gabriel Landeskog, listen, I've got him as my Conn Smythe Trophy winner. Cale Makar, Philip Grubauer with a .936 save percentage. I don't know that we really learned a whole lot about the Avalanche more than confirmed what we believed about the Avalanche going in, right?
Well, we learned they have a killer instinct. They did not let St. Louis up off the mat.
Mm-hmm.
So one of my friends says to me today, do you think that Colorado should throw game 4 to burn another game off Kadri's suspension?
Yeah, you're really playing with fire when you do stuff like that.
First of all, I'm like, who thinks of these things?
People think of these things. Of course they do. Come on.
Why do you come at me? I said to my buddy, like, why do you come at me with these? This is the same person who came at me with the Carey Price conspiracy theory after game 1 of the Toronto series.
He pitched after it. Pitched in Laval.
Yes.
So is this the kind of guy that says, do you really want to win game 4 on the road? Wouldn't you rather do it at home? Just throw game 4 on the road and get another home date out of it, home gates. See that kind of guy?
Yeah, that kind of thing, yes. But first, so they didn't. Like, they fell behind in game 4-1 nothing, and they still ran away with the game. That's a team with a killer instinct. I love that in the playoffs. And for all their players who played well, and a lot of guys played really well, you know who I thought was excellent this series was Landeskog.
Listen, Nathan MacKinnon gets the headlines for good reason. Guy's one of the best players in the world. You know, Mikko Rantanen gets headlines. Wow, what a release this guy has. I've maintained this for a long time now. Landeskog is the guy that holds that line together. Those guys go all over the ice because of Landeskog. Those guys do whatever they want. They can do marvelous things out on the ice because of Gabriel Landeskog. You know, there's a great, I mean, we can think back to that game one between these two teams where he has a fight with Braden Schenn, right? So this is after Rantanen gets hit. And I was reminded by someone afterwards, I was talking to an OHL colleague, and he said, do you remember that Kitchener Sault Ste. Marie game? It was Landeskog, I think it was a rookie season, and Jake Muzzin, defenseman with the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds, now of the Maple Leafs, of course. And Muzzin was one of the tougher guys in the OHL. And Muzzin ran one of the Rangers hard right by the Rangers bench. And Landeskog was either on the ice for it or it was the next shift, went right at Jake Muzzin and handed it to him. And everybody on the Kitchener Rangers bench went, because it was like one of the first fights, I think, that he had had in his entire career. Like, you just took on like this monster in Sault Ste. Marie. When I'm watching that Braden Schenn fight, I was reminded of that one because every punch had anger in it. You know how there are like some fights, Ellie, where two guys, almost like they're agreeing to have a fight and there's not much anger in it, but they're going through the motions because that's what the moment calls for. Landeskog and Schenn, like, there was anger and determination in every single one of those punches that Landeskog threw. And you look at it, every single game, two assists, here's a goal and an assist.
Great tip in game four.
He's just such a fantastic hot. And that's why, you know, I really want Colorado to go deep here, mainly because I want people to know Gabe Landeskog more. To me, he's one of the most entertaining and interesting players in the game, but he's shadowed by, listen, Nathan MacKinnon is like one of the best players in the world. So I get it. And Rantanen too. But I'm glad you mentioned Landeskog because I think the guy's fantastic. And sneaky, sneaky tough. And maybe, as someone told me,
not so sneaky.
Yeah, well, and pound for pound, one of the strongest, maybe not toughest, but strongest players in the NHL. Yeah. I got all day for Landeskog.
That makes two of us.
Nazem Kadri will appeal the 8-game suspension. And as you've mentioned, initially it goes to Gary Bettman. Yep. And then if that's not satisfactory for the player, it goes to an independent arbitrator. Are you surprised that he chose to appeal this?
Yes and no. I said yes because I think these are very difficult to win. You know, for example, when Tom Wilson last appealed one of his, what was the timeline? Basically, it worked that he got money back, but he'd already missed a ton of games, right?
Yes.
It's not like it really benefited him in terms of games played, which I think is what this is all about for Kadri. Mm-hmm. It saved him some money, but that's not really a factor here. But the reason that I'm not surprised is, as the week after the suspension was done, I heard very quickly that Kadri was upset and he wanted to appeal it, and he was determined to appeal it. I had to wait until it was finalized. You know, Chris Johnston mentioned it on Saturday night, that it looked that way. But I believe Kadri, from the moment the suspension came down, he wanted to appeal it. And ultimately, it's his right. If he says, I want to appeal it, then, you know, he should. That's the way it works. It's going to be a challenge for him. There's no question about it. So what I think he wants to do is to get it down from 8 games to 5 or 6. And if you look at that suspension, that hit, for first-time offenders, that hit can get 2 or 3 games. It's usually not 8. And the reason that it got this high is because it's Kadri and it had been 2 previous times in the playoffs. I think he wants to get it down to 5 or 6. You know, I was going through some of the language this weekend, if you take a look at the NHL appeals process, there's specific language in there in terms of what the commissioner and the arbitrator have to rule on. And I'm going to read it to you because I saved it on my phone right here.
Okay.
So a player who appeals, basically the standard of review will be whether the league's finding a violation of the league playing rules and the penalty imposed were both supported by substantial evidence. That's what Bettman and the arbitrator, he or she, will eventually have to rule on should we get there. You know, I mean, that's what we're at here. I think that one of the reasons that Kadri is appealing is because Tom Wilson didn't get anything for the incident with Panarin. The challenge will be Wilson got 20 for a similar hit
right
years ago. The other challenge will be that they basically invented a suspension for Wilson this year. He got 7 games for a hit on Carlo from Boston that nobody has ever gotten suspended for. The other challenge will be that when Kadri hit, remember a couple of years ago in Toronto, he hit one of the Sedin twins on a shot. He didn't get suspended because he got him on the shoulder. And that was a very controversial non-suspension. So I think what the league is going to do is pull together all of these pieces of evidence and say, this is our, and plus the fact that Kadri has history. And the one thing I would like to suggest, I think the league needs to change the repeat offender language.
From 18 months?
Yeah. Like, I understand it because I've been around it a lot. Even the Avalanche got it wrong. And I think as a team, you have to make sure you get that right. But I think you should just change the way it's worded. Because too many people out there think repeat offender is 18 months when that's only for how your fine is affected. The message has to be your history always is taken into account.
Okay, so we will stay tuned for the conclusion of this process. And we should point out too, not that we think it will happen, but someone did ask me this tonight. Gary Bettman can actually say, actually, 8 games is a little light. My decision is 10.
Yeah, you're right. If that's not happening.
No, I don't think it's happening either, but just so we're all on the same page, because it may come into play somewhere down the road, and not to be surprised by it. When you do this process and you go through it, the commissioner could say, you know what? You got a point there. That 8, now it's a 10.
I just think this is going to be all about, I think Kadri will consider this a victory if he gets it down to 5 or 6 games.
Okay, Elliot, before we say goodnight, Edmonton's Josh Archibald, this just tweeted out as we record this podcast in the wee hours. It's now Monday morning, by the way. NHL Department of Player Safety tweeting out Edmonton's Josh Archibald will have a hearing Monday for clipping Winnipeg's Logan Stanley. There you go.
Well, now I'm even more glad I didn't do it again, because that's just too much piling on. Like, that would be, I would not enjoy that.
So that's our podcast for today. Emil, thanks for making it sound tasty.
And please remember to send us tweets.
Please do.
Do you like it this way to get it on time and fresh? Or do you prefer that you don't like the way it sounds? And if it means we come a bit later and we're a bit more stale, like day old bread.
Now you're from biasing the jury here, Elliot.
But please, like, you're the audience. You matter, and Amal does really care about the sound, yes, and I respect that.
But that's one of the things we've talked about from the beginning of this podcast. We want to make it really pleasing to the ears. That's why there's not a lot of yelling and screaming and big noises and waka waka morning radio kind of stuff. So do you want it soothing for your ears, or you just want raw facts and get it out quick? Your decision, not ours. Taking us out, a bit of a nod to our Australian listeners. Taking us out, a Melbourne band, and putting some catchy tracks out with some great lo-fi sound powered by progressive harmonies and emotive instrumentals. Elliot, are you impressed that I come up with this language off the top of my head each and every show?
It's pretty amazing.
From the land down under, here's High School with De Facto on 31 Thoughts, the podcast.